As followers of Jesus, we, above all, should lead the nation in racial reconciliation.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I pray for unity over the
Ah, that was a sight to see. That was a sound to hear. That is music in God's ears. I'll tell you exactly what that was in a moment. This is Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. The phone number to call, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I'm sitting in the Truth Studios in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where everything first started 8.5 years ago, doing Saturday broadcasts beginning in March of 2008 in this very studio, sitting in this very seat. So it's great to be back here and face-to-face with the great team that puts our show together every day, engineered here in Winston-Salem. I posted a picture of it on Facebook and Instagram. If you want to take a look, you can do so. But I'd love to hear from you today, 866-34-TRUTH. We had an amazing show on Friday. We had almost 2 straight hours of calls with listeners wanting to weigh in on the issues of racial reconciliation. Callers wanted to weigh in and share their perspective on the pain that we're experiencing in America and the division that we're experiencing in America. And it is my belief that we as followers of Jesus are uniquely equipped to lead the way in racial reconciliation in America. We as followers of Jesus are uniquely equipped to heal the wounds and to bridge the divides. And on Facebook earlier today, I posted 5 reasons, I'll get into that, 5 reasons why we as followers of Jesus should be able to lead the way. Now, what you heard, the clip you heard, was a white cop leading in prayer, and the amens you were hearing were the voices of protesters at a Black Lives Matter protest. And they are praying together, a white cop and black protesters, praying together for unity, praying together for healing of the divide. That is what it is going to take. I laid out 10 declarations, 10 things that I believe are true. And I laid them out in an article that's on numerous websites now. You can read it by going to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. And what I said was this: look, we're potentially at the brink of civil war, of race wars in America. We're potentially at the brink of real chaos and pain in America. And I'm saying this across the board. Tensions are rising on every level, and the elections, the volatility of the elections, and the nationalism behind the elections, that is going to increase the explosive nature of things. And because of that, I said, look, now's not the time to mince words. I can't worry right now about who might be offended if I said this or if I said that. I can't be concerned about that whatsoever. What I have to do is speak the truth in love and let the chips fall where they may. So I'm going to share those declarations with you. You can tell me if you agree or disagree. Here's what I ask for: be as candid with me as I'm being with you. Be as candid with me as I'm being with you, and do your best to listen first before responding, as I seek to do as well, to digest what others are saying, to hear, to weigh their perspective, and then to speak. So we're going to have a constructive, eye-opening broadcast today on The Line of Fire. Number to call to get in the conversation about the racial divides and the pain in America today, and the question about law enforcement and police doing a good job or a bad job. 866-348-7884. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
A black will die 1% or less at the hands of the police and 99% at the hands of a civilian, most often another black. So if you want to protect black lives, then you got to protect black lives not just against police, which happens rarely, although with tremendous attention, and which happens every 14 hours in Chicago. Every 14 hours, and we never hear from Black Lives Matter.
That was Rudy Giuliani speaking. Is he being racist in what he says, or is he addressing an issue that needs to be addressed? 866-34-TRUTH. Check this out. Secretary of Homeland Security, Jed Johnson, he stated that even though the Dallas shooter, Micah Johnson, told hostage negotiators he, quote, wanted to kill white people, especially white police officers, that it's still relatively early to qualify his actions as a hate crime. What in the world is Secretary Johnson, Secretary Johnson thinking? How in the world can he make a statement like that? Relatively early, still relatively early to qualify these actions as a hate crime. Of course it's a hate crime. Of course it's a hate crime. If there's anything worthy of being called a hate crime, it's this. All right, so let me lay out some of my thoughts on where we stand today. You can tell me if you agree or disagree with me. I may read all 10 right now or expand on a few of them. We'll see how it goes. Number one, white Americans sometimes do not see racism when it is there. Black Americans sometimes see racism when it is not there. Now, either I just offended lots of people or you're nodding your head agreeing. I'll repeat it. Number one, you can read this by going to AskDrBrown.org, click on latest article. White Americans sometimes do not see racism when it is there. Black Americans sometimes see racism when it is not there. Okay? Number one. Number two, there is a real reason for black frustration and anger. When whites minimize the pain of blacks, or worse still, claim that they're just being pawns of the media or political leaders, they deeply insult their black brothers and sisters. Most whites really do not understand what it is like to grow up as a minority culture, and they cannot relate to the historic suffering of blacks in America, a history which is not as far in the distant past as we'd all like it to be. Number three, all black lives matter, not just the lives of blacks who die at the hands of white cops. Number four, rhetoric that leads to violence, let alone that calls for violence, must be categorically renounced and repudiated. Number five, everyone must work together to address injustice and inequality wherever it raises its head, be it in the courts or on the streets. Number six, it is social suicide to launch a war against our law enforcement agents. Number seven, it is important today to state that all lives matter. Number eight, there is no comparison between a policeman overreacting and killing someone to another person intentionally targeting policemen for death. Number nine, the elephant in the room is the breakdown of the black American family. Number 10, there is far more that unites us than divides us. I'm going to read through these again, and I'll expand on a few of them here and there over the broadcast, but we're going to get you to weigh in very quickly. Number one, white Americans sometimes do not see racism when it is there. Black Americans sometimes see racism when it is not there. Number two, there is a real reason for black frustration and anger. Number three, all black lives matter, not just the lives of blacks who die at the hands of white cops. Number four, rhetoric that leads to violence, let alone that calls for violence, must be categorically renounced and repudiated. Number five, everyone must work together to address injustice and inequality wherever it raises its head, be it in the courts or on the streets. Number six, it is social suicide to launch a war against our law enforcement agents. Number seven, it is important today to state that all lives matter. Number eight, there's no comparison between a policeman overreacting and killing someone and another person intentionally targeting policemen for death. Number 9, the elephant in the room is the breakdown of the Black American family. Number 10, there is far more that unites us than divides us. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm going to go straight to the phone, starting with Kevin in Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, thank you for taking my phone call.
Sure thing.
Just want to address some of the issues. First off, I think you said it was Secretary Johnson who made the statement that, you asked if that statement that he made was racist. I won't say that is racist. I think that it's...
No, excuse me, just to clarify, I asked if Rudy Giuliani's statement, if anyone thought that was racist. Secretary Johnson said that it's still relatively early to categorize that as a hate crime. So I just differed with him on that, but I didn't say that was racist. But yeah, back to you, sir.
Okay. Yeah, and thank you for clarifying. First off, I think that I wouldn't define it as what Giuliani's statement as racist. I think what it is that it's uninformed, because when people say that there's more black-on-black crime, that's correct, but they also have to understand that there's that crimes perpetrated against white people are committed by a majority of white people.
Mm-hmm.
Crimes are normally committed against people within that same community or that same group or same ethnicity. So there's nothing surprising about that. So can his racist be defined as, can his comments be defined as racist? I wouldn't say so, but I would say it as uninformed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, can there be a dialogue between blacks and whites? As a black man who's actually been in communities with white people, who's been in communities of black people, who grew up in a majority Afro-American community, who served 8 years in the Army where I've had to deal with all different ethnicities, creeds, and cultures. Sure, we can communicate with one another, have a dialogue with one another, and interact with one another. But the frustration as a black man for me is that when issues like this have arisen, there has been a really slow response to mm-hmm. creating dialogue toward it. For example, if you look at the past cases with Ayanna Jones, with Eric Garner, with Tamir Rice, you know, these people in our community, in our culture, looked as if they were gunned down. These unarmed innocents were gunned down, and there was no real response from the people who did it, except for them to be acquitted of all charges. And it feels as if as a black man, if we're not being able to be protected by the ones who were sworn to protect us, then there's frustration there.
Yeah.
And our frustration is double when we try to be patient and allow the justice system to get some type of retribution, only to be denied that when officers get acquitted.
Yeah,
can I say one last thing, too?
Go ahead, real quick. Go ahead.
All right, real quick. Now, as I said, 8 years in the Army, what was frustrating for me is that when cops are allowed to shoot an innocent and not have any type of real retribution toward them. In the Army, during wartime, in Desert Shield, Desert Storm, every soldier is bound by the UCMJ, Uniform Code of Military Justice. If there is an illegal shooting of an innocent, and that innocent dies, even if they don't die, then we are brought before a board, and we have to prove that shooting or that killing of an innocent or civilian wasn't done recklessly. If we can't prove that, then we are headed to jail.
Yeah, understood.
So,
let me jump in. I just because our phone lines are jammed, sir, and I want to make sure that I try to give everybody as much time as possible. That the very things you're raising, that's why on my list, point number 2 was there is a real reason for black frustration and anger. That was my second point in my 10, for the very reasons that you're sharing. And when I wrote, when whites minimize the pain of blacks, or worse still, claim that they're just being pawns of the media or political leaders, they deeply insult their black brothers and sisters. Most whites really do not understand what it is like to grow up as a minority culture, and they cannot relate to the historic suffering of blacks in America, a history which is not as far in the distant past as we would all like it to be. Kevin, you've articulated things well, and I appreciate it. Thank you for weighing in. And again, that's why that's high on my list, to say there is a real reason for the frustration, for the anger. No one's justifying violence against police. Kevin would be the first one to say, of course not. No one is justifying that or calling for that, God forbid. But as our first call on Friday said, we'd just like some empathy. We would like for our white brothers and sisters to show some empathy. And I think that's utterly important in God's sight, and it's the heart and soul of justice and loving our neighbor. All right, we'll be right back with more of your calls. Hey friends, this is Michael Brown. I want to encourage you to join our support team today. Become a torchbearer, one of our regular monthly supporters that enables us to broadcast the Line of Fire around America and around the world. And oh, every month we sow back into in many, many different ways. Join our team, become a torchbearer. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on donate.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, if we're really going to see a gospel-based moral and cultural revolution, that means the people of God leading the way. That means you and I being peacemakers. That means you and I being ambassadors of reconciliation. But you know, if you've ever done marital counseling, you've got to get both sides to communicate and open up about what's really going on and speak candidly. If you're going to hide things, feel a certain way and not say it, then you're going to get nowhere. So I appreciate Kevin, our first caller, getting us started. And I want to reiterate point number two in my list of 10, which you can read at AskDrBrown.org. There is a real reason for black frustration and anger. Now, let me give you another perspective. It's point number three. All black lives matter. Not just the lives of blacks who die at the hands of white cops. So white critics have rightly asked, where are the rallies and protests when a three-year-old black child dies from random inner-city gunfire? And what about the disproportionate number of black babies killed in the womb, not to mention blacks killed by others blacks? So a black man named Richard posted on Facebook, we cannot pick and choose when we decide to make a stand. We're either all in, we must address black-on-black crime in addition to the murder of innocent blacks, or we're not in at all. We can't let these race-baiting politicians further divide us. If you haven't noticed, they want a race war. We must stand up and unite both black and white and whatever other ethnicity and reclaim our freedom. He's absolutely right. Now listen, you might say, you don't understand. As black Americans, we say it's a tragedy that there's such a high homicide rate in our midst. As black Americans, we say it's a tragedy when a little kid is shot in crossfire with gang violence. We say it's a tragedy. But that's something we have to work out in our own community. Whereas when we feel the system is against us, that's what hurts us so deeply. When we feel the system is against us and people are getting away with things because of color, that's what hurts us. Okay, I understand that, which is why it's important to make the whole statement. Yes, these other deaths are tragedies. And yes, we are marching through the inner city when that little three-year-old is killed with random gunfire. Yes. However, we are now calling on the system where we feel the system is against us. That's the conversation that we need to have if we're going to see racial reconciliation and healing of the deep divides that exist. And then if there's a political leader, whoever that political leader may be, whatever the color of their skin might be, and we feel that their rhetoric is unhelpful, let's not be provoked by it. If we feel that a protest group on either side of the issue has rhetoric that's unhelpful, let's not be pawns of someone else's agenda. Let's have our agenda as followers of Jesus. We go to Woodbridge, Virginia. All right, let's try. We'll go over to Arlington, Virginia. Jacob, welcome to the Line of Fire. Hello, Jacob, are you there? Lost Jacob. Let's go to Georgetown, Massachusetts. Ibrahim, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Can you hear me clearly?
Loud and clearly. Sir, may I ask what your country of origin is?
I am from Kenya and Tanzania.
Kenya and Tanzania. Okay, that was my surmise that you were from Africa. So how long have you lived in America?
I have lived stayed in America for about 5 years, but I used to work here for a global company. So I did leave here and go back to my country.
Okay, but you grew up in a culture that was almost entirely black. Now you come to a culture that is white majority. So I'm sure your perspective is going to be unique in that respect. So eager to hear from you, sir. Go ahead.
So I've been listening to this debate on the race issue, especially after the recent killings. And I guess my concern has been the way that the black community tends to be put together. And I think this is a huge issue, and especially because the issue affecting the African American community. I refer to myself as African American or AAA, which means I don't have the historical background or the context that the African American community has gone through, and which means I don't qualify to be in that group. Not to say that I am better or less. No, not that. But I think if we have to address the issues that we're having in this country, then we have to look at them to be able to understand what group are we specifically dealing with, which is the African-American community, which has suffered multi-generational inequalities and injustices. And so if you combine those two groups, the recent Africans that did not come through slavery, and people like me, that have a very different experience and actually don't understand the issues of African American that they go through, which we're talking about a few million people, then we, at the end of the day, miss the real point of who is suffering. But also, if we come up with policies, those policies cannot work because it's going to be missing its target. So the African community, like me, is very different in terms of socioeconomic. They are highly educated, for example. They have very strong family foundations, so they do pretty well. Actually, my community would be the most educated in the state. And so if you put those groups together with the African-American community and say call them black, then you're doing an injustice to the African-American community.
Interesting.
So if you go to Ivy League schools, when they're trying to do to introduce policies to increase diversity, 90% of the black people who get there, they're not African American, they're African. If you go to the best jobs that are trying to increase, the best companies that are trying to increase diversity, you find Africans and not African American. So at the end of the day, the African American community tends to be left behind, because there's not a distinction between it and
that's a whole perspective then that's probably not factored in at all. So where there's a desire to help or reach out, it may not be done with the results that are desired. But there's something very, very important, and we're out of time in this segment, so I've just got to jump in. But thank you, sir. I'd love to interact further on these points. But for everyone that is still guilty of thinking that there's something inherently inferior about blacks, or inherently inferior about whites, or inherently inferior about Asians or Native Americans or Hispanics or whoever the group would be, what you need to recognize is if people are in a healthy family environment or in an equal social status within society, regardless of the race or ethnicity, they will all basically do equally well. Thank you for the call. Friends, we've got a terrific resource offer. You can get my entire audio teaching on Go and Sin No More free with the purchase of the Go and Sin No More book. Check it out at askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I've heard this. I've heard this argument that you can only be racist if you're in the majority culture. So that by definition, as Mark Lamont Hill now argues, black people can't be racist. Dylan, we should see if we can get Mark Lamont Hill to come on my show and discuss this. Yeah, black people can't be racist. To say that the Black Lives Matter movement is racist is bizarre to me, not just because black people don't have the institutional power to be racist or to deploy racism, but because the movement is called for justice. The movement is not just called for justice. The movement has incited hatred against others. And of course you can be racist without being the dominant power. I find that type of stuff to be completely unhelpful and the distraction from the real issues. All right, let's try again Arlington, Virginia. Jacob, are you here this time? Hello, Jacob.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
My issue really is because you keep saying we should apply the Christian principle, and I feel like the best approach could be like looking it to John 8, you know, when the lady actually broke the commandment, but Jesus Christ was like saying, even though you broke the commandment, you know, he was like, he didn't condemn the person. I think our approach more, a lot of times, we try to find who's right and wrong. And that's not actually Christian. There's a lot of mercy and forgiveness. And going to what Juliana spoke, there's an element of racism in this, because if you're on the other side, you're going to actually feel like a victim. And if you lose your child, no matter what, you will still feel the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Even the cops, even who hurt the black, they too will feel the pain. You lose something, as in by killing somebody. You got to live with that. So it's a difficult situation for both sides. But the way to solve it, I think a lot of times we talk about, it's more patience. I don't think a lot of times the cops should just go into confrontations. There's a way they could like change the laws more to be more patient.
Let me ask you this, sir. Do you think the cops intentionally want to go out and have confrontations and shoot people?
No, I don't think so. And that's the truth. It's just like every other person who do something wrong. Sometimes they want to protect their own side. But the truth about it is, in the process of protecting your own side, you might be trying to be right and lose. We as Christians, we are trying to bring everybody together. We're trying to forgive, be merciful.
Yes.
That is the word of God. He's not taking sides. So each time we take sides, sometimes we're not bringing Christ's name up. The main thing is we're trying to walk with each other, look for patience, endurance. And actually, the people who suffer most is the blacks. It's not only the blacks in America, the blacks worldwide. I don't know why, but people are born blacks. And so people are born white too. I don't know why people hate each other, but some things have been there for long.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah, and just to jump in, when I appreciate your thoughts, Jacob. Look, there are spiritual strongholds. There are just manifestations of sinfulness in human beings that we can hate people who are different. That rather than looking at someone as a colleague, we look at them as a competitor. It's almost like that person is somehow a threat to our well-being. But as I laid out on Facebook, five reasons why we as followers of Jesus should lead the way in racial reconciliation. One, we have a unique unity, having the same Father and being saved by the same blood. Two, we're called to be peacemakers and ambassadors of reconciliation. Three, as those who have been forgiven, we can forgive others. Four, in Jesus, there's neither black or white, yellow or red. Five, we know the life-changing power of the gospel. And with God, all things are possible. We'll be right back with your calls.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
God, we look to you for strength.
Prayer is the only thing that's going to relieve this tension and stuff that we have in the city.
We need to rally around the police and our leaders and carry on and just try to show others who we really are.
We're at a tipping point, and we could go either way. And so it's important for us as a nation to try to figure out how do we not miss this moment? How do we make the changes that are needed and that are necessary so that we don't go off on the wrong side?
Reverend Brian Carter and others from Concord Baptist Church in Dallas, Texas. According to Mayor de Blasio and his wife, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio and his wife, Shirlane, so he's white, she's black. Black Lives Matter is, quote, a force for good that has, quote, changed the national discussion. All right, called it force for good that has changed the national discussion. And remember, he has been very hostile to the police, the police hostile to him. New York Police Commissioner Bill Bratton said, we have a different perspective. Black Lives Matter is a force for good. It's about, this is de Blasio saying he has a different perspective than Bill Bratton. Black Lives Matter is a force for good. It's about peaceful protest. It's about shining a light on the problems that we have in race relations across this country. We've had a history of it, and it has not gone away, but we haven't had enough positive action on making change, and I'm very encouraged by the Black Lives Matter movement. That is what Mayor de Blasio and his wife said. Another perspective from a black police chief in Texas? Okay. According to him, he said, Black Lives Matter, as far as I am concerned, is a radical hate group. That is El Paso County Sheriff Richard Wiles. So as an African-American, he said, as far as I'm concerned, Black Lives Matter is a radical hate group. For that purpose alone, I think the leadership of this country needs to look a little bit harder at that particular group. The consequences of what we saw in Dallas is due to their efforts. So in my list of 10 points that I made, if you didn't hear them, you can read my article about racial tensions at AskDrBrown.org. Now is not the time to mince words. And I said rhetoric that leads to violence, let alone that calls for violence, must be categorically renounced and repudiated. Not a few leaders in the Black Lives Matter movement need to do some serious soul searching in light of the intentional targeted shooting of cops in several states this past week. And Professor George Yancey himself, an African-American, will be joining us, God willing, in a couple days on the broadcast. He describes Black